Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure being able to present Scott Beavin from West Philadelphia here in Cologne. And he's one of my recommended artists and activists. So it's really great having you here and seeing like an hour of your work. So I actually don't know what you will be presenting. So big applause for Scott Beavin.
Thank you. It's on. Hi. Welcome, everybody. And thank you very much, Johannes. Thank you, Jens, for inviting me to present at SIGINT. So I'd love to tell you guys a little bit about what you're about to see. So for the past 10 years, I've been traveling around the planet doing this culture jamming, VJ, and storytelling thing called the Lost Film Fest. Now, the Lost Film Fest started in 1999. A couple of 17-year-old high school students from the suburbs of the city where I live, Philadelphia, they contacted me because they wanted a couple of the bands on this punk rock record label I was running to play at their event. They had this whole idea to have film and bands in a sports field. And we thought that the town would be very excited to have this socially conscious arts event going on in their town. Well, we decided to be very professional in making our proposal. We had maps and diagrams. We wore suits and ties. And we even took showers. And we thought that they'd be so excited to have an arts event, this thing, this socially conscious arts event in their town. But as it wound up, paranoia won over. See, they thought that it would turn into fires and riots and people running around naked and drugs, and not as if any of those things in combination are really all that bad. But the truth is that we probably would have only had about a dozen people come, including the parents of the 17-year-old kids and their dog. So we decided to bring it to where I live, which is West Philadelphia. Do any of you here know West Philadelphia?
Born and raised.
You realize that that's like yelling out Freebird at one of my shows. West Philadelphia is a very interesting place. It's unique in the United States. It's full of activists and artists, mad scientists, jugglers, shoplifters, shoplifting, juggling, mad scientists. And it seemed to be the perfect place to bring the Lost Film Fest. So we had 2 days of films, bands, puppet shows, a punk rock haircut booth, and mystery popcorn, which we lathered in hummus and chocolate syrup. However, no one bought any. And it was great. We decided to continue doing the Lost Film Fest from this point on. And right after that, I went to take part in the protests at the World Trade Organization meetings in Seattle. This is in 1999. I was there to be a part of IndieMedia.org, which is the Independent Media Center, which many of you may know in terms of the history of the internet. It was an open source project by activists in order to create a way of bypassing the distortion and suppression of information that normally happens in the United States. It was a way for people to become citizen journalists. And rather than to hate the media, people could become the media. So from the streets of Seattle, people would post stories, and photographs, audio, and very, very choppy, primitive video at 2 frames per minute from in real time, I guess you could say. It was a very interesting project. And while there, I shot a ton of video, and I made friends with a lot of other citizen journalists who shot video. And I came back to Philadelphia to present all of this stuff, and I had a stack of VHS tapes. But at the time, I knew nothing about editing video. So I decided to do it very DIY, do it yourself. I set up two VHS decks and a video beamer. And so I would tell a story and put in a tape that was already queued up, tell a story, put a tape that was queued up, and go back and forth and back and forth. And people liked the way that this program interacted. So I continued the Lost Film Fest and started to travel all over the place with it. And and since then I've been all over the Americas and Europe and other places. And And so I found myself in a very interesting position a few years ago, where I realized that because of the political climate in the United States, of course, the political climate kind of shifting away from the extreme right, I wouldn't quite say toward the center, but shifting away from the extreme right of the Bush administration, I believed that that I probably would be out of a job after 2008, after the elections. So I thought about what would be the next step in the evolution of this citizen journalism. And so I thought about it for a little bit. I thought, maybe it's science. So with that said, I'd like to show you a few examples of stuff that I've been showing with the Lost Film Fest, and then I'll move on to my thesis, introducing you guys officially to the new program, which is Scientists Are the New Rock Stars. They are, you know. So with that said, here we go. Dun-dun. Wow, I'm so excited and very nervous. I know you guys are a very particular audience. So here we go. Okay, so I'm going to introduce with this first film, which is one of the very early films that I was traveling around with. So Sam Green, I'll tell this story. This film would not have been possible without the brave and valiant efforts of dumpster divers, or how do you say, container? Yes, people who run around and rescue things from the rubbish. Bill Daniel is a filmmaker, and he was gathering some old film reels from the trash, and he was going to make a collage out of it. And it wound up that this footage actually was almost lost to history. There was a protest at the 1969 San Francisco Film Festival that involved pies and hippies. And so Bill knew what this footage was when he put it on his deck. And he ran over to his friend Sam Green's house. And Sam was so excited because he'd been looking for this footage for a long time. So he and Christian Bruno put together this absolutely great piece. It's called Pie Fight 69. Enjoy.
Do you know what the reason for all of this was?
I have no idea. I have no idea. We have made several arrests for disturbing the peace, and we'll try to figure out what it is. Things calm down. Right now we're trying to clean the scene up and see if we can get a semblance of order around here.
How is this affecting the film festival inside?
I don't have any idea.
Thank you. Well, there were the four of us who had this little company called Grand Central Station. We were trying to produce independent feature films. This was a late 60s, and we were full of that. That I think we wanted to say something about the festival, which was very mainstream. It just seemed to us that they represented the establishment, and we wanted to represent the anti-establishment.
Nice of you to be here, though.
In those days, opening night of a film festival was a big, very formal, very fancy event. All the wealthy patrons of the arts in San Francisco showed up. I mean, they had the Klieg lights and the red carpet and the TV cameras.
There are several ideas of what happened here this evening. It could have been a fantastic promotion stunt or a demonstration against the film establishment. But a lot of people think it was actually a motion picture being produced here at the film festival.
The plan was very simple there. This white van pulled up in front of the Masonic Auditorium, and there was this long red carpet and lots of lights. In the crowd, there were about 25 people, all of our people, dressed in a variety of costumes. And a fellow in a white jacket gets out, takes out a tray of pies, and starts to walk up the red carpet towards the auditorium. And I bumped into the pie guy, and he drops his pies. And he picks a pie up and throws it at me. I said, "Why, you?" And I pick up a pie and run after him. As all this was happening, I could hear the TV cameras going on and the crowd going, oh, you know, and all those kind of things, which is exactly what we wanted to have happen. And then it exploded.
San Francisco Chronicle, October 22nd, 1969. Carloads of hippies protesting culture vultures threw more than 500 pies at spectators and police to make a shambles of the opening of the San Francisco Film Festival last night. 13 young people were arrested in the melee outside the Masonic Auditorium on Nob Hill.
Why there's this disgusting, unintelligent reception to the dirty, whatever that is, paint. Why?
Does there have to be reason?
There has to be reason, yes. There has to be logic and intelligence. Excuse me.
A leaflet attached to towels handed out at the scene said, "Grand Central Station leaves you with this souvenir of the already legendary event in which you have participated. Grand Central Station has staged this street theatrical as a soft bomb, tossed in protest of everything that restricts energy, spunk, originality, and wit in American cinema."
We decided if we were a film company, let's make a little film of it and we'll show it, and that, you know, it'll seem like we did it, staged it for a film purpose. Well, of course, that never happened. We did have this footage and so on, but I don't think any of us really wanted to linger around. It hadn't done what we'd hoped it would do. We got all the publicity we could have wanted. I mean, it was in the papers. It was the event for two or three days, the talk. But we didn't raise any money. We spent money. I mean, it didn't help us at all in our ultimate goal. And the company really fell apart within a few months after this. We all had to go out and get jobs and go to work and do something else. Peter Adair went on after that and made a number of good films, particularly Word Is Out, which was one of the first films to deal with the question of homosexuality. And Peter Shickley, who was the creator of P.D. Hubach, became quite successful over the years.
You think it adds to the film festival?
It adds a lot of gook on the curb there. It's difficult and slippery to get up the steps.
I collected some of the clippings just for posterity, and now and then I come across them and chuckle to myself. Sure, it's a piece of film history, and it was certainly lost until you found it, and somebody found it in a wastebasket. And I guess the film maybe has some value, and it would be nice for people to remember.
Yes, one of the major focuses of the Lost Film Fest, of course, is a creative activism through the history of activism, dating back to 1800s to now, focusing on culture jamming, culture hacking, and just thinking things through inside out. And one of the groups of folks that I've been particularly inspired by are Circa. If you guys are familiar, the clandestine insurgent rebel clown army. Let's join them for a moment at the G8 summit protest in Gleneagles, Scotland. Let's check out what they have to show us. Now, we'll be joining them as they are blockading the road for the delegates to get up to the meeting. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay. And of course, we cannot go without giving a shout out to the A team of Erfurt. Here we go.
Vor 7 Jahren haben einige Menschen ein altes Gelände besetzt, das sie wiederhergerichtet und nutzbar gemacht haben. Es wurde dadurch ein Ort geschaffen, in dem Rassisten, Nazis und Sexisten keinen Platz haben. Von vielen Seiten werden sie angefeindet und das Gelände soll jetzt abgerissen werden. Sie wollen nicht so ganz ernst genommen werden, aber ihre Gegner müssen sie ernst nehmen. Wenn du diese Menschen unterstützen willst, komm nach Erfurt und sei mit ihnen das A-Team.
Okay, so where does that leave us? Well, that is a very, very good question. And here we go, a question for all of us. Where does that leave us? Well, what will be the direction of creative activism? Are we going to be fighting against? Will we be fighting for something? How can we clarify what it is exactly that we want? A few years ago, I met this very interesting, strange man at Burning Man, the festival out in the desert. The man wandered into our camp, and we thought it was a bit unusual. He was a man with a very long, white, flowing beard, and his hair was up in a giant thing, and he offered to read us our Mayan horoscope in preparation for 2012. And of course, we couldn't turn down the opportunity to have our horoscopes read for 2012. But the thing is that this man shared something incredibly profound. He pulled me aside and he said in his voice, "Your mission for the future is to avoid the use of the N-word." And I thought, I don't use the N-word. And he said, "The N-word that I'm speaking about is not N-O-T. When one uses the negative in language, they are defining something in a way which leaves open an infinite amount of possibilities for interpretation of what one is saying. If one uses Buckminster Fuller's principles of putting in the least amount of work to have the greatest amount of output, it would make sense that one should think through how to define what it is that somebody is trying to say so that the outcome in the end is a full comprehension, or at least a full attempt for one to comprehend what one is saying." And I thought about this because I had spent a great deal of my life saying, fuck you and stop it and protesting in this particular way. And I thought, 2012 or not, this is a very profound statement that he's making to me. How do we actually enact this into social change, environmental change, activism, and thinking inside out about the way in which we interact with the world? So a few years later, I found myself collaborating with a group of people that I've collaborated with in different ways. People like Stephen Lambert from the Anti-Advertising Agency, and Becca Economopoulos from Not an Alternative, and the Yes Men, you might be familiar with. Now, Steve came up with this idea to make a statement that would be a positive statement, a hopeful view for the future. And this statement wound up becoming an issue of the New York Times that announced this. Iraq war ends. So the question mark was sort of addressed with this. Oops. Move this over a little bit. Dun, dun, dun. Oh yes, here we are. This is my partner Liz on the left and Andy from the Yes Men. Now, there were about 30 of us who worked collaboratively on a new kind of project, because we'd all been such sarcastic jackasses for a very long time in our activism. And we thought, well, why don't we have practice doing something in which we state exactly what it is that we want? So we worked together to put together this paper. We worked on wikis to create all the articles. And then we came up, upon many different problems. The New York Times, of course, being one of the most famous newspapers in the United States, and how could one find a printer of newspapers when there are so few printers that would actually do a New York Times, that we wouldn't be discovered? So I came up with this crazy idea to fib a little bit. I think it is okay to lie a little bit. I told them that we were making all these to bundle up, and that we were going to make a house out of them as a museum installation. And they believed it at the printers, and that was okay. We printed 80,000 of these, and then on the day when we released these to the public, Andy Bickelbaum from the Yes Men was being interviewed by the Associated Press, and they asked how many copies there were, and he was about to say 80,000, and I put my hand over his mouth, and I said into the microphone, 1.2 million. And we looked at each other like this. And lo and behold, that was the number that appeared in the mainstream press. It was pretty ridiculous. So, so would you guys like to see some of the other stuff that we did with this project? Yes. Yay. Okay. So we not only had this paper, we distributed it between 7 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock in the morning in New York City. Now, this was a first, because I don't know very many activists who get up before 11 o'clock in the morning. However, everyone was out in the streets, and we had these smocks, as you can see, that we made up. It said, the New York Times special edition, almost identical to the real New York Times smocks. And we distributed them at Union Station and Grand Central and all these other very well-known places. A lot of the activism that happens in the States, for some reason, big demos happen on a Saturday afternoon when all the press are off having their weekends and spending time with their families. So we decided to do something on a weekday. It's very common sense, I think, a little bit. So, okay. Let me show you one of the other fun things. Oh, yes, here we go. Now, you can go and check out our website that we made for this, NY Times. It's, if you're taking notes, it's nytimes-se for special edition.com. Here's our paper. There we go. You can check out all the articles online and download the PDF. And we also made a video to go with this. I'm going to show you our video that we showed on our site. Okay, here we go. Are you guys having fun so far? Yay! Okay, here we go. Dance? Okay. Everyone always tells me to dance. Here we go.
Early this morning, commuters nationwide were delighted to find out that while they were sleeping, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan had come to an end. According to the newspaper's publishers, 1.2 million papers were printed at six different presses. They were driven to a number of prearranged pickup locations, where thousands of volunteers stood ready to pass them out on the street. Articles in the paper announced the establishment of national health care, the abolition of corporate lobbying, a maximum wage for CEOs, and of course, the end of the war. The paper includes international, national, New York, and business sections, as well as editorials, advertisements, and even a page of corrections.
I don't know, it's like a dream, you know, you talk about it, everybody's talking about it, it's like, this war needs to end, and here the war is over. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe it.
And I knew change was coming to America, I just didn't expect it so fast. It's incredible.
This could really expand our idea of what's possible.
This is a deep, positive, potential thing happening here. And so I'll take the prank for that, and I think the time should too.
I don't understand what statement they're trying to make. We've been all over the Bush administration since day one. We set the standard for coverage of the Iraq war.
Like Judith Miller?
You know, we have to exercise some muscles we either don't have or that have atrophied or something, a civic muscle, a thrifty muscle, a generous muscle.
I can't believe it. The war is over. Wow, unbelievable. Oh my God, I don't know what to say. I'm trembling.
Well, what if? What if?
So that you are looking at. This is Ben Kitzer reporting from New York City.
And of course, the question that's always asked is, well, how did people react to this this little prank? Here's part of your answer.
Some commuters got their hands on what looks like a special edition of the New York Times with this headline, Iraq War Ends. As you might have guessed, though, it's a fake.
Listen, David, this was handed to me this morning on the streets of Manhattan. And right away, with the headline, Iraq War Ends, you look closer. At the top, all the news we hope to print. The hoax apparently in the works for 6 months. 1.2 million of these fake papers printed and passed out by thousands of volunteers. We mentioned the headline there, but also there were fake stories about the UN passing an across-the-board weapons ban and President Bush being indicted on charges of high treason. It even includes fake editorials. One more, you know, show that this might be a hoax. The paper is actually dated July 4th, 2009. And I'm looking at this thinking, why would they do this? Well, the real New York Times says this is unauthorized, looking into who published it.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I'm actually going to pass something out. Just a very quick plug for the project that Liz and I do. We organize tours for a lot of different interesting culture gem. You folks, if you can pass these back. Including the Yes Men and Johannes from Monochrome and some other interesting folks, Greg Palast. You can check out our website, eviltwinbooking.org. So That, of course, brings us to this new part of Lost Film Fest, which is scientists are the new rock stars. Now, I have a particular thesis that some of you may or may not agree with. Oh, do we have some for you guys? Here we go. Now, I've been working with film and music for a really long time, and in particular with the whole do-it-yourself aspect of film and music. And I've watched, I watched in the 1990s as we created a whole do-it-yourself hardcore punk rock scene using nothing but free phone calls from courtesy of big telecoms, and also going to, you know, and getting free photocopies and all this other wonderful stuff, and then gradually these very Luddite punk rock kids adopted the digital interwebs as a tool of distributing information. Now, the big debate that's been going back and forth in the industry, so to say, separate from a lot of the Creative Commons debate, is that now that the forces of democratization have been unleashed, basically it is possible to get information out onto the internet very quickly and effectively, where does that leave business models? Well, some people say, like the Boing Boing crowd says, well, you know, it says to these corporations, well, deal with it. You'll have to create an alternate business model to deal with this openness of information. Now, and of course, the digital rights management side of it from the big corporations, you know, they keep on lobbying for different pieces of legislation in all countries, like internationally. My thesis is that it is already too late, that the military-industrial complex of the United States in developing the ARPANET, which is, of course, a distributed tool, created something which is much harder to destroy than the market, because it is distributed. It's a distributed network, and you can't really quash the internet. You can pick off pieces. You can put up a firewall that's 11 meters tall. However, there will always be a 12 meter tall ladder to climb over that wall. And while this debate has been happening, the entire entertainment industry in the U.S. and here has been collapsing. And big companies are having a very hard time marketing. Filmmakers and musicians are more eager now to be entrepreneurs and to do everything on a very small scale. And also, because of the openness of the information about how they're treated by the major labels, and major film distribution companies, that's available on the internet and can be communicated, people are not so eager to jump to having a, you know, to being on these major labels and major companies. And so I think it's going to be a lot harder for these companies to create rock stars and movie stars in terms of notoriety. And I'm not necessarily talking about rock stars who go to hotels and put cement in the toilet and tear up the bed. I'm talking about rock star in terms of notoriety. And I think that the new rock stars will be scientists, but a very particular type of scientist, and also a new definition of scientist. The type of scientist I'm talking about are people who take into consideration where things come from, where they go to, in relationship to these ideas, to these ideas and society, and the environment. So you wonder, like, who are these ridiculous scientist rock stars? Well, I think I'll show you a couple of pieces about some of these folks. I have 12 minutes left, so here we go. I'll start it off with an experiment. Now, what happens when you introduce drugs to spiders? They spin all different types of webs. Speaking of webs.
The wood spider is the most accomplished of all web-building species. Recently, scientists gave these tiny creatures a variety of psychoactive drugs to observe their effects on web building. When given a minute dose of LSD, the spider's web took on an unfamiliar, minimalist structure. When given caffeine, the web structure was not affected, but the spider's behavior was. Given THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, the spider didn't build a web. It built a hammock, where it lay all day and watched the caffeine spider go. When given alcohol, the spider built a web, found a mate, and raised over 100 young. But the mate got a restraining order, and now the spider can't go within 100 centimeters of the web. The crack cocaine spider figured building webs was for suckers, waited till the caffeine spider was exhausted, then came up behind it and popped a cap in its ass. Nice web, Mr. Crack Spider. When winter came, the marijuana spider had no place to live. It ended up in the crack web as the crack spider's bitch. For more information on the crack spider's bitch, contact the Canadian Wildlife Service in Ottawa.
So,
sorry.
No, it's okay. Now, when I was younger, I was like many of you. I'm assuming I was kind of geeky. I guess we're all kind of geeky. And I was very interested in becoming an aerospace and robotic engineer. Yay! And so throughout the years, I kept up with my interest and did all kinds of fun projects. Here's one of my robotic projects that I did. This is a robotic George Bush, of course, that has a missile in one hand and a claw in the other, and it had a remote control, and the head spun around in multiple places. This is us. Oh, yeah, that's right. We brought this robot to the Sundance Film Festival. And, of course, here we are with the robot. Of course, we couldn't have the robot at the festival without a little warmth. So we had to light him on fire while everyone was in the street, and all the fire trucks came out, and we almost got arrested. But anyway, that's a whole other story. And while doing all this fun robotic stuff, I've also been traveling to different artificial intelligence labs. Here's some stuff from the CMU labs, Carnegie Mellon. This is one of the Martian landers. Here we go. Yay, here's the lab. That's a little robot that that inspects mines and can map them out using a sick laser. Dun, dun, dun. And this is Stuart Anderson, who's a mad genius robot builder. Here we go. So yeah, robots. Now, this, of course, to me is very scary. Military-industrial complex is a very, very scary thing, especially this project that was created by Boston Dynamics. It is a project that incorporates biomimicry or mimetics. It is, of course, Big Dog. One of the reasons why I find this particularly disturbing, of course, is that it's used in all different types of military applications. Those packs on each side are about 150 kilograms apiece. Of course, it will increase the lethalness of soldiers out in the field. So here is another video of Big Dog. It's even scarier. Okay. So I keep on thinking about all these interesting projects. Of course, one of my main inspirations nowadays is this Dutch guy by the name of Theo Janssen, if you're familiar. Theo does these kinetic sculptures, and everyone thinks, oh, they're just wonderful musings on robotics or mechanics, but But one of the things I'm most intrigued with is the practical use or potential practical use in agriculture or permaculture. I think about the amount of impact that's made by a leg as opposed to a wheel. I think about how this tool could be pushed by a person. See, there's a person pushing it there. How it can be pushed by a person and be used to pull a seed spreader or a plow. And also, it doesn't compact the soil. So these are some of the things that I like to look at. And here's another project that I'm very inspired by. I'll show you a couple of moments with it because I'm about to run out of time. But this is a project from Oaxaca, Mexico. It is an appropriate technology space called La Casita, where they build bicycle-powered machines. And then I'll end it with this and open it up to questions and all that. Okay, here we go. Just watch for a moment.
desde el cimiento, ¿no? Empezamos a construir. Primero el techo, nos quedamos mucho tiempo sin paredes, poníamos sábanas, le hacíamos como le podíamos hacer. Y poco a poco ha sido ese proceso de ir, ¿no? Entre muchos, realmente tampoco digo que ha sido mío ni nada más de la Unitierra. Realmente aquí el esfuerzo lo ha dado mucha gente, todo ha sido a través de Tequios y de la cooperación, ¿no? Y de la participación de la gente, ¿no? Que nos quiere apoyar. Y así hemos ido poco a poco, mes tras mes, ¿no? Escarbando, haciendo, ¿no? Y es como más realmente hemos sentido el actuar de por qué hacemos las cosas, pues, ¿no?
En el 2003 comenzamos un acompañamiento con la Universidad de la Tierra en Oaxaca en la construcción de dispositivos llamados Fuego Solar. Logramos la instalación de un tostador para granos en la Sierra Norte de Oaxaca y otro en Selva Chiapaneca. En el 2004 nace Casita. Gracias a la solidaridad, la cooperación, el tequio, así como el apoyo mutuo de personas, vecinos, compañeros y de la Universidad de la Tierra en Oaxaca. En la actualidad, el espacio sigue en proceso de construcción, en la ampliación del espacio físico con el que contamos, así como en la producción de bicimáquinas para múltiples usos en el campo y la ciudad. Los diferentes prototipos pueden ser bicilicuadoras, bicibombas de parapozo y riego agrícola, bicimolino, desgranadora de maíz, bicidesculpadoras de café, etc. Las bicimáquinas son funcionales para uso doméstico y comunitario. En la mayoría de los casos, las bicimáquinas pueden ser utilizadas para lograr una mayor producción que sea comercialmente sostenible. Miramos con anhelo y crítica un futuro en el que la construcción de alternativas para la creación de biciherramientas específicas pueda ser utilizados en diferentes tipos de talleres, como por ejemplo, sierras en las carpinterías, taladros en herrerías y tornos, entre otros. También se pueden usar para el funcionamiento de maquinaria de rendimiento mediano que apoye la producción en comunidades cooperativas, microempresas comprometidas con la producción justa, sustentable y que apoyen la construcción de una vida comunitaria digna. Construimos y diseñamos sanitarios ecológicos secos, utilizando técnicas mixtas que se definen dependiendo de las condiciones y necesidades locales.
Okay, so I think I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much for us hanging out and checking out Scientists Are the New Rock Stars. You know what I think I'll leave you with, actually? I'm going to leave you with a tease. I'm going to leave you with a piece that is a water-powered motor scooter created by Ryan Wartina. And if you come and see a future Scientist or the New Rockstar show, you can see it running.
A little picture of this. This is a water electricity powered motorcycle or moped or 49cc little motorcycle. What happens in this little motorcycle, if we get a quick turn around over here, is we build these little guys, and these are what we call I-cells. These are lithium ion energy storage units. They hold about 1 kilowatt hour of energy each. We go ahead and mount a couple of those right up here, one up on this side, one down here, and we go ahead and that electricity comes through here and goes into two water electrolysis units, which have been hand-built stainless steel, so the electricity goes in here and then creates oxygen and hydrogen, which evolve and come through these tubes here and come through a flame arrestor and a little hydraulic oil lubricant for the engine and goes right into the intake manifold.
Okay, so that is a teaser, and there are many, many rock star scientists out there. Vandana Shiva is one of them. Natalie Jeremijenko is another, and so on and so on. I think we're running over time a little bit, but do we have a couple of moments for a for questions? Yes? Any questions, comments? Oh my goodness. Well,
you're so happy.
You guys like the show?
Yay.
Thank you. Wow, thank you so much. Yeah, I was actually very nervous about this show. Normally, the Lost Film Fest and Scientists of the New Rockstars presentations will be about 2.5, 3 hours, and we'll have a lot of hands-on things. When I'm actually touring with Scientists or the New Rockstars starting this fall, I'm going to have a bicycle-powered blender and power unit. What's that?
Do you have a website for that?
Oh, it will be scientistsarethenewrockstars.com.
No, I mean for the blender.
Oh, for the blender. Oh, yeah. It's if you go to El Enemigo Común, ElEnemigoComun. And if any of you want to stay in touch with me and you want some websites, I can give you all my contact information. Also, if you would like to make a donation to the Lost Film Fest tour, you can get your own copy of the fake New York Times, and I have some badges and things like that. El Enemigo Común. I'll write it for you. Okay. So, thanks so much, everyone, and Thank you.